listening to the Dreaming of Freedom podcast on the 2 Cents FC network.
All right. Welcome back to the Dreaming of Freedom podcast, where we play at the intersection of football, politics, history, and Black culture. I'm Jermaine.
And I'm AD.
And we are members of Black Herons United, an independent Black supporters group for Inter Miami and all things Black soccer in South Florida.
For today's show, we'll be speaking with a legend in the game, former USWNT player and currently the head coach of the Pine School men's soccer team, Stacy Wilson.
Stacy is currently based in South Florida and is winning everything in her path. In 2017, she won the high school state championship with the Oxbridge Academy women's soccer team. And in 2022, she won the high school state championship, this time with the Pine School men's soccer team. And she just recently did a repeat, if I'm not mistaken, this past season. She also spent some time at FAU, Florida Atlantic University, as the head coach of the women's soccer team. And most recently, she was awarded the Women's Coaches Award of Excellence from the United Soccer Coaches.
We're really excited to welcome to the pod, Stacy Wilson. How are you doing, Stacy?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Having a nice and easy day. Happy to be here with you, gentlemen.
Awesome, awesome. It's great to have you, Stacy. I know this has been in the works for quite some time, but we're finally here. So I think it's going to be a good episode. Quickly, Stacy, can you just talk to us a little bit about the United Soccer Coaches Convention, your participation in it, and the awards and presentations that you were a part of?
Yeah, the convention, if for those that aren't familiar with it, it's probably the biggest collection of coaches in the U.S. The annual soccer. It gets people from all over the country and lately all over the world. You get coaches coming over, sharing their knowledge, a couple of big names here and there. Like you said, I really enjoy it for the knowledge part. You know, I enjoy giving the presentations and hearing, picking up things that others have to share. But there's also a big part of the convention is just networking, like being able to see so many people. And I don't know if networking is quite the word. Yeah, it is in some ways, but also just seeing people like they have these coaching community groups. So Black soccer coaches, you know, they're meeting other coaches like you. I work with the API coaches and they, you know, similar type of, they just like being around each other. You never get to have that. So yeah, this past year I did about 2 field presentations and was on an ethics panel. That was real cool. Where we talked about different ethical dilemmas that the coaches have, you know, so here in the college coaches comparing notes of how we approach things. That was interesting. I did a field session though. I usually when I present, it's on kind of what I'm known for, which is more the fitness side of things. You know, like you said, back when I played, I was probably one of the fittest players. I think we did the beep test with the national team once and I was the last to drop. Nice. You know, I just really enjoyed the training. I was the one that I probably spent as much time in the strength and conditioning coach's office as I did in my own soccer coach's office. You know, I just really enjoyed that. So when I presented, it was on like trying to teach coaches ways that they can add fitness, different ideas on how to do it. Because, you know, so many do it incorrectly, you know, being American football type of culture. So it's trying to get, you know, give people ideas and you know, not take, it's such a complex topic, honestly. I get real nervous whenever I do it just because I feel like you have to have everything right because people, you know, either they want to argue about you not having the kids think enough, you know, doing fitness when you should be doing this. And it's like, so I have to have like my science down and my rationale down why, no, this is important to do at times instead of having a ball. You know, so yeah. And then, what were the other presentations on? I worked with. It was awesome working with Wendy LaBolt. She does her. She's a professor at William and Mary, but she has a book, Fit to Finish, And so we combined talking about girls, ACL injuries, how to do strength and conditioning year round for females. And it was targeted towards high school females. And it was just a good conference, a lot going on. And like you said, those awards, my mom got to come. Of course, once she heard I was getting an award, she was bought
of
her
course.
Ticket. Yeah.
Shout out to moms.
Of course. Number one fan.
always. That's what's up.
That's dope.
Yeah. So that was cool. I'd say that really caught me off guard and that was a big honor. It was great, the women's award, because if you look at the people that have won it previously, it's like, wow, to be in a group of those women is just really an honor. So
some elite company.
Yeah. I was like, ooh, now I got to step up even more. these women. So. And then even the black soccer coaches, they did their first year of giving out awards. And so they did like Legend Awards, Lincoln Phillips. I think you might've heard of them.
Oh yeah. So, you know, man, all about Lincoln Phillips.
Yeah, the man. So
yeah.
And they gave high school coaches award. I got the high school coach of the year award from black soccer coaches. So again, being recognized by your peers is nice too. So overall, presenting so many times, I have to admit, I'm stressed going into it. Sometimes I wonder, right. But I enjoy it so much. So
that's good to hear. So tell us, how did you get into football?
I just kind of stumbled upon it, really. No one in my family was knew about soccer or football. I grew up watching baseball with my grandma, or football with my dad, or basketball. Those were the things that I loved. I think someone even gave me a ball when I was like 6 years old. My godmother gave me a ball, and I was like, threw it in the closet, And I didn't use it until I moved to Virginia 2 years later when I was like 8 years old. And then at recess, that was all they played, So that's where I learned about soccer and really enjoyed it. Started to be kind of good at it, and just asked my mom to let me try out for a team. And then it all kind of went from there. But yeah, those were the days of recess. We were kind of... we'd get even bold. I'd be like, me, Ricky, and Scott against all y'all.
That's good.
Yeah, it was like, so.
Love it. So it was your time in Virginia that you really picked up the game and started playing seriously.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, so, that area. Mm-hmm.
And so you went to Jefferson High School?
Yep, TJ. Jefferson High School.
Okay,
for Science TJ. And Technology. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And we know that you were quite the football star, soccer star in high school. If my research is correct, in 1993 and 1994, you made the All-American High School Girls Team. And we also learned that you were the historian for the school's Black Student Union.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. That group helped. That was definitely, how do I put it? Like, we were in a real minority at that school. There was like very few blacks. And I think I took a bus like 25 miles, school bus one way to get there. Yeah, it was a magnet school for, we had a real strong black student movement. Yeah.
They actually just reached
out to me recently. They were like, we heard about you. Can you come back for this? I was like, next time I'm in town. Yeah. So absolutely.
Yeah. So can you tell us?
We put on like our president. She wrote an entire play. We put on a play for the school. Yeah, 2 years in a row. We were real active. I'm glad you brought that up.
That's what's up. So yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about your high school experience? Playing soccer, I guess, in a predominantly white school, just kind of how was that growing up at Jefferson High School, playing the game, also, engaging with the Black Student Union, throughout high school?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much, you know, what do they say, eat, sleep, breathe. That's what I did with soccer at the time, you know, just loved it. It was pretty simple. I felt like soccer helped me organize my life, you know, because I had those type of parents where it was like, school comes first. So if you want to do soccer, you have to be, you know, have this straight. So that motivated me to make sure, you know, get good grades. Didn't really have problems with time management back then, you know, because knew what you had to do. I played for a team that was pretty competitive. We, at the time, our coach took over. So I only played, unlike the kids these days, when we flip teams all over the place. I played for one club team from the time I started playing all the way up to college. And so we were going, by the time I was in high school, our coach had turned us from a team that he'd taken it over from the gentleman that first got me. And we were, you know, we were lose all the time, like, you know, losing seasons. And, you know, with his coaching, he was kind of like a first paid coach. And we would practice. And before you knew it, we were winning state cup for club soccer. Like, after a while, it got so easy, we started to play up and win the state cup there. Yeah, because we were winning the state cup and the region cup. So it's like, well, let's try it on the older age group. Mm-hmm. And did it again. So, you know, so during high school, it was a lot of club soccer. And then I did the ODP, and ODP was different than it is now. You know, there's so many ID programs. Back then, though, ODP was pretty much like the one. So that took up my summers. I never once did a real soccer camp. Not in my life. I've never once had a private training lesson, and I've never gone to a soccer camp.
Get out of here.
So it was just, you know, athleticism, you know, playing basketball. We had a basketball hoop out back, so I think that helped my quickness and the one-on-one. And mm-hmm. you know, whenever I'm working with kids and they can't play defense, they're going in too, so I'm like, geez, didn't you ever play basketball? like you know, try to make the metaphor. So.
yeah
So high school years, yeah, and then the ODP, but that was where Anson saw me play, the coach in North Carolina, because they heavily recruited those ODP things back then. And yeah, went off from there. So, I mean, I had a great high school years. I got to experience going overseas with ODP a few times. And yeah, like I said, the school it was a little bit stressful, like I said, going somewhere that's 25 miles away.
Sure.
But at the same time, it was, I really enjoyed my classmates. You know, it wasn't a school that was, you had to take like a aptitude test and everything to get in there. So it wasn't really, so everybody was, I don't know, well-rounded. You know, okay. I remember sitting on the school bus. We would have all these intellectual talks and things. I was like, you know, okay. that's more my vibe. Like I like, yeah. you know, I don't like just being goofy. I actually like thinking, and you know,
of course,
kind of how my parents raised me. You know, I was 6 years old. My dad listening to Malcolm X albums, and so it was very, wow. you know. So yeah.
okay so from early on you were well versed in this kind of history and this kind of black radical tradition.
Exactly.
Dope.
Yeah, well.
So during high school, I mean, because I know you talked about kind of how significant fitness and kind of studying fitness and you know, working with different players around fitness and like how that's really important to you. So during high school, again, if my research is correct, you were also selected to participate in like a fitness and training workshop with Gatorade, if I'm not mistaken. I think the workshop was called like Hot Tips for Hot Sports.
Wow, you research. Yeah. Hey,
got to.
Yeah, that was nice.
So I mean, can you like talk about that experience and kind of like how that shaped, how that shaped the significance of fitness in your life going forward, right? Kind of in your soccer career.
I mean, I'd say I'd say that was maybe not something that shaped it. Well, let me first tell you what it was. They brought in someone from each sport. So I was soccer, and they had a basketball, volleyball. These kids were like amazing in their field. So, and they brought us in, you know, I guess they wanted to do a little bit of research, ask us some questions and things. But they showed us, they took us to the actual labs, and we got to watch some guy with tubes in him and all this stuff. But it was cool. And I really appreciated that trip because I got to see Michael Jordan play. Yeah, that was back when he was still playing. So we went to, because they were in Chicago. So watched the basketball game and even went to his restaurant. So
get out of here. Okay.
Yeah. But in terms of, you know, I can't say that experience, that was more reflective of the fact that I love fitness, you know, and that's why I got it. Not that made me love it, because, you know, like I said, when I look back at middle school and I think back, we had a room that had like one of those universal machines all in one. Mm-hmm. And I remember going in, I don't know how we had downtime, but I wasn't like skipping class, I'm certain, you know, but I went in my downtime and I remember doing leg press and stuff. And like, you know, I was always trying to get strong. Like does that, like goes alone to the room and tries to get a little bit of work in, you know?
Probably AD.
Yeah. And I went, and in high broken. School, I even remember telling the coach, like, look, I got, you know, these practices, like, somehow it's, you know, like they're good and all, but I'm losing fitness. Like I need to lift. And so he was kind enough to, like, I'd say we made a deal where he let me leave practice maybe 2 days a week and just to go back to school. Cause our practice was like close to school. It wasn't on the school field campus. It was like 5 minutes away. But he was like, fine, you could go back in and get some weight room time before the late bus leaves, you know, but so I just always loved fitness. You know, those are, if I have spare time reading, I like reading the strength and conditioning journal. So.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. So after a successful professional career, you find your way into coaching. How does that happen?
It happens by, again, just stumbling upon it. I wish I'd decided early in life, realized that, but you know what? There's no way I could have realized early in life that I wanted to be a coach, because there really weren't a lot of female coaches and role models. Like when I was young, my role models were Mary Lou Retton and Flo Jo. I love those two athletes.
Okay.
So, you know, with I think I came into coaching where I was at a barbecue, and it was the end of the year barbecue for our semi-pro team, the Raleigh Wings. And we were all in, shout out to the Wings. The team just got inducted into the Hall of Fame for North Carolina, because we were winning championships. Yeah, then. And shout out Dory Staples, Brian, who's my national team roommate. She's a sister. They inducted her into the Hall of Fame for North Carolina too. Yeah.
Okay.
She could have gone Olympics for track. She was just, she was amazing. Loved playing with her. But so we were at the barbecue, and the coach just, he had a phone call and everything. He's like, Stace, are you going back home? Like up to, and I was like, yeah, I don't, you know. He said, well, they need my friend, who's actually a UNC alum. He's in Northern Virginia, Flint Hill School, and they need a soccer coach. You know, would you be interested? So I just lucked out, because Flint Hill is, I stayed at that job actually. So that just coaching there then turned into the AD, you know, was like, well, we want to keep you here. They gave me like winter. Can you work with our athletes just on some after school conditioning, whatever you want, just do it, you know, and I did that. And then they said, well, we're expanding the school and we are in our upper school. We're building we're going to have two different campuses and we're making a weight room. Would you be interested in, you know, can you help us design it and everything? So, and went, started teaching classes during the day for them. And then at one point, the athletic director there, he saw me working with a kid, some big basketball kid. And, you know, he was a little bit, you could tell he was like not coordinated. He was like a little bit, athletics wise, he was slow, you know? Mm. And I guess he was just like, he called me in his office and he was like, hey, I want I want the school to pay to get your license. I want you to get a strength and conditioning license and just do that for us full time. Stop coaching soccer. Just do that. He says it's just a win-win. You're just too good with the athletes. Like, you know, so thought about it. And yeah, I was happy doing that. So for a bunch of years, I worked with football players, really got along well with lacrosse coaches. I guess soccer and lacrosse have a lot of same energy systems and quickness needed. So those guys were always, we were always tight. So Flint Hill, I just kind of developed there for 7 years and then found it where I wanted to go to move to Florida. So, can you turn that off? That's a little distracting, please. My parents are visiting.
Shout out to the parents.
Hello, yeah, shout out. Shout out.
Shout out.
Yeah. So, so Flint Hill, I was there. Like I said, I got to learn about nutrition. They helped me get my, also certified through the International Society of Sports Nutrition. And yeah, I really liked the switch. I went with it because, I don't know, it just helped me see a different side of coaching, you know? Once you take playing time out of it, your relationship with the player is so much different. When they see you as, because they're afraid of you a little bit more, I realized when you're the coach and you have all this power over them, but when you're the strength and conditioning coach, all they see you as somebody that's trying to make them better, you know? Right. So the relationship is different. But I like that too, though, because, I mean, it doesn't have to be. Like, once you understand the psychology of that, then I just take that back to being a soccer coach, you know? It was good. It was good growth for me as a coach and understanding how to connect with players.
Okay.
And I moved down to Florida. Florida is way different than Northern Virginia. Like, Northern Virginia, it's like, I coached at one place, and I mean, another coach who we coached at summer camp with UNC camp, he happened to have a club team, turns out, right in the same area. Rival club, mind you. Rival club. And he was like, hey, can you come to a preseason camp for us a week? And I was like, yeah, no problem. His club didn't have a problem with it, mine didn't. It was like, no big deal, like doing what's best for the kids.
Sure.
Down here in Florida, that would like never happen.
Interesting.
Yeah. Mm. They're very tribal down here. This club and everything.
Yep.
And the kids suffer. And that's why, you know, development suffers because everybody's doing everything to keep theirs.
Right. Territorial. Yeah.
Yeah. So unnecessarily so.
And word.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of, but I see it also there. Like, I think one of the teams that I coached, it was like, they weren't first division, you know, maybe second or third within WAGS. WAGS has like, it was a very big Washington area girls soccer league, huge league. And no, we weren't first division, but you know, like the parents went, you know, I was their coach. So they had Olympic gold medalist coach. Nobody felt bad or whatever. Like, and all the second level teams or division teams or whatever, like, it didn't seem like a big deal, you know, like come here. It's like the teams, it felt like the teams are, that's like the stepchild. Like they really don't, the treatment was different. And so it was interesting because, I felt like really appreciated, but I also didn't like it where it's like, you're just putting me on this team just to keep this team together. If that makes sense.
Yeah,
like I don't mind doing that because I don't mind being the one that makes kids feel valued and all of that stuff and the teams that I work with. But at the same time, I see what a lot of the clubs do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting.
Wow. Okay. So, love the coaching. No, I just I'm fascinated with this coaching experience, and I'm really interested to know if. What do you prefer, or do you have a preference, coaching or playing, and do you have a favorite moment in both spaces? Like, do you have a favorite moment as a coach, and do you have a favorite moment as a player?
All right. Well, what do I prefer? I I thought, and that's what we used to joke, is we went into coaching just so we could keep on playing in with the kids. So if I have to pick, which do I like more? Of course, I like playing more than coaching. Yeah. But, you know, as the body changes, that's not as much of an option.
Sure, sure.
So,
yeah, that's real.
You know, and, you know, your purpose in life, you know, no spring chicken. So I do have a little perspective and want to leave. You know, leave a mark on other people, that affect other lives positively, you know, through soccer, because it did do a lot for my life. And so coaching, I really enjoy it now. Like I said, I coach U9 boys, I coach U13 girls, U14 boys, and the high school boys. So it's pretty wide age there. Yeah, and so it's like always having to flip up the skill set that you're using and the language that you're using. But thankfully I've done enough United Soccer conventions and really learned a lot from U.S. Soccer Foundation too. They have some phenomenal their programs that they do. They make sure that us trainers that go out and teach their coaches, they give us training. So, and I, you know, I have to say it's been win-win there, because I've learned so much.
But, is that is that difficult to adjust the skill level for age ranges?
It can be, yeah, because there's an art to it, because it's, as well, because some ages, you know, you need to, like, it's deciding whether or not I'm going to be, how much to talk, you know, whether you let them figure it out, you know, how firm you are, because, you know, with the high school boys versus U9 boys, you know, it's two total different tones. And then, it's very, very different. Like, I'm all having to adjust, because even with high school, my relationship with those players, I don't teach at the high school. I just come in for 2 hours a day during soccer season. So it's even harder getting to know them, and how I present and carry myself is a lot more cautious than it is with these, man, U14 boys. I've coached them since they were 10 years old, you know, so it's just, we're loose around each other. They, you know, so figuring out, like I said, when to be firm and how to, and versus, or when to, hey, we just need to have talks, you know, because it is now, I feel more of a pressure if I'm your coach for 4 years, you know, to be that, make sure I'm being a mentor and giving you these lessons for life and not just lessons on the field. So that's really where I'm at with those boys.
Yeah, we interviewed Chris Nurse, who's also a local coach down here, just became an assistant coach with the Inter Miami Academy down here. And he talked a lot about, you know, exactly what you just said in terms of instilling life lessons, rather than just focusing on, you know, the tactics, you know, or the field of play. So do you have like a certain coaching philosophy? I mean, do you have a certain coaching style, right? Like, you know, how do you like to set up, right, on the field, but also like just your general overall philosophy as a coach, right? You know, and particularly of, you know, of young players.
I guess I don't have, I mean, if you're asking me for a resume type of philosophy, I could come up with something there. I mean, my philosophy is, you know, make sure you're an expert as much as you can in the game, know what you're saying, have that down, take as much coaching education, coaching development, whatever you want to call it, because someone corrected me recently, and I like the correction, you know, coaching development, not coaching education. You can be educated as anything and still not be a good coach. You can know all the X's and O's and stuff and still be an awful coach. My philosophy is more like I said, the coaching the high school boys is more difficult for me, because I don't get to see them during the day, learn their personalities. Because for me, that's how I like to coach. I like to motivate players, inspire them, get them to take ownership. You know, set standards. I treat everybody equally. You know, I don't want to spoil the prima donna or spoil the kid that's the best on the team. I'm actually probably harder on them, have higher expectations, because I'm doing it because I don't want them to become a prima donna and, you know, and then just miss out on opportunity or something just because they didn't have their mind right and didn't realize that that's an important part that you have to have. But in order to do that, you really have to read your players. I joke a lot during practice. I try to get things, like I said, keep things moving and be firm at the right times. But at the same time, like if somebody's, I'll crack jokes at them and everything. And they like that. And I think that's the best when you know each other like that. I could go on.
No. I mean, it's all good. I mean, I was wondering if you had a favorite moment as a coach. Oh.
Favorite moment as a coach? It's hard to say. I'm trying to think of another one. I already have the one in my mind, and I'm trying to think, am I that shallow? Is that it? But I feel like that first state championship with the girls, that was because I feel like I'd used all of my coaching skill to get it. Like, I feel like they earned it, but I feel like I also had us on a program where we weren't high runner, we should, so to speak,
Sure.
People had never heard of us, but it was like, we did preseason training. I did their strength and conditioning. Like, I had them on nutrition, everybody walking around water bottles, to get us chocolate milk after practices and things. We had 2-hour practices every day, because it's like, okay, if we're done, then I'm walking y'all to the yoga studio. And then I put them through foam rolling, had headspace meditations going on, So all these things to get our minds right. Everybody. Yeah. It was like the total. Yeah.
And this was at Oxbridge.
Mm-hmm. And we had huddles, so I was always breaking down video. We had our arch rival of a high school. It seemed to always get in their heads. But so it was nice to help them get their first win against that, American Heritage.
American Heritage.
So that was a school that they just went at in like football, and then it carried over to soccer. Wow. And so we got that monkey off their back.
That's what's up.
Yeah, it was nice. And then like even there were little stories within it. Like some players, I remember one player coming to me like, why'd you move me to defense? And she was real upset. She'd only play forward, And I had to explain to her, look, I'm not hiding you in defense. Like, I was a defender. Like, I think you don't hide people in defense. You actually have good this, you got good that.
Absolutely.
By the end of the season, she like embraced the role, and it changed her soccer experience. I think she'd had like, maybe a lot of coaches that, like I said, in South Florida, not sometimes they don't do things for the benefit of the player. They just do it for the registration fee. I gained a lot of trust with her, and she went on to play, actually run track in college. But that made me feel good that year, affecting so many females. And for a lot of them, it was something they're going to remember forever. And they just felt so excited about. Probably that championship. Because even if I think if you were to look at the video of us winning it, I remember, I think it was like just hugging someone. It was just the most relief and it was just disbelief. Like, we did it. So
that's dope. That's so dope.
Okay, so do you have like a role model or someone you look up to in coaching?
Well, I mean, a lot of role models. I mean, really, I'll try to take what knowledge, see what's working from everybody. Nobody's perfect, but there's something that's working from them and learn from it. I'd say I really like, she coached back when I was in college. And it was one of the only female college coaches that I saw back then. And she just had a really big presence, confidence. And our team would fly out to Portland and play against them, or it was UW. And Leslie Gallimore, And so I went, and once I joined United Soccer Coaches, like I said, it was around 2011 or whatever, I'm going and watching presentations, and I really liked the way that she explained things and broke it down. And that probably is what got me more into the coaching education side of things. So I'm a big fan of, Leslie Gallimore. I'm a big fan of Colleen Hacker. She was the national team sports psychologist back in the day.
Okay.
And you know, she was such a positive person. I remember at the time thinking, like, she's got to be fake. Nobody can be this like happy and positive all the time. Like, this is an act, right?
Yeah.
No, it's not an act. And I actually just bought her book that she came out with. You know, so people like that. I've never coached with Lincoln. You know, can't see him coach, but whenever I talk to him, he just drops these nuggets of wisdom, and so I love being around him. Oh, foolish me! I'm actually forgetting. You know, or I'm not forgetting, but I'm almost not mentioning just because he's out of the country. Probably the person who's most recently shaped me mentorship wise would be Lenny Taylor. He's the technical director right now down in, I believe it's St. Kitts. So he's, let me check on that. Let me fact check it. But Lenny, he's amazing. And he's influenced so many coaches. He's a Jamaican who moved to New York early in life. And he ended up playing pro soccer. And he was fortunate to work with Pele, to Pele's camps, and knew him. So he's just a wealth of knowledge, and he kind of, you know, keeps me sharp if I need advice with the game or kind of just philosophy wise. Like I said, that's what I love, is somebody that could feed me there. And Lenny Taylor. Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. No, yeah. I'm going to do some more research on Lenny Taylor.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fascinating.
You got to bring him on the show one time. You will love him.
Say less. Say less. Yeah. Say less. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, okay. So this is actually a good segue into the next question. In the field of coaching, kind of, you know, throughout your coaching career, have you experienced or have you encountered a lot of other Black coaches, head coaches, and specifically Black women coaches? And why or why not do you think that's happening?
I'd say recently, the movement that the Black Soccer Coaches group within United Soccer Coaches, they've more exposed me to more black coaches and female Black coaches. But, you know, I'd say early on, there weren't many. In fact, a few times I saw it, it'd be like, oh, you're interviewing me and her for the same job.
Wow.
You know,
yeah.
It's just like,
wow. That's very telling.
Telling. So few that. Now there's a lot more. I feel like the Caribbean has a lot of undeveloped talent, female coach wise. Like I've gone to Trinidad Tobago quite a bit, and whenever I go there, I'm impressed with the women I meet.
Trinidad. Okay.
Yeah, but the women's group. What United Soccer Coaches, you know, I'd say, maybe Carla Thompson. She's one who, she was more one of the first known of, you know, black coaches. She's working with one of the teams. I think she might be general manager for one of the West Coast NWSL teams. You should check her out too.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Wait, is this
But she's one of the first only US soccer, or I can't say one of the first that I knew of. US soccer staff, black female.
Okay.
Angel City maybe.
Okay, I see. Okay.
But yeah, like it is there were no role models. Didn't have
in San Diego, that's right. San Diego Wave. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what's up. So you think you're seeing an increase in that representation.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think we've seen such a recent increase?
George Floyd. That really made it to where suddenly things that were going on for years, suddenly it's okay to talk about it, like to be welcome to talk about these things on your podcast.
Yeah.
Or, I know your podcast, you wouldn't mind me talking about it years ago too. But I'm saying now everybody, is more open to being sensitive and diverse.
Right.
Yeah. It's now more of a I guess you could say, some people look at it as a business advantage. And then the more exposure, I can't say enough positive things about, the Black soccer coaches with the way that they're really trying to promote different people, because we're there, but do you get recognized? Mm-hmm. But yeah, the George Floyd thing, that was really and it actually pissed me off for a while, the way that people changed, because I did feel like, all y'all right here marketing off of this, and you're only doing it now because you're able to market and be a spokesperson. You weren't doing this before.
Exactly.
Suddenly on that blackout day, I saw a girl, women that, they never want to talk about being Black. Exactly. Now you're making statements about it.
That's it. It was very performative, moment.
And who knows, maybe they just didn't feel like they could speak out before them, but I don't know. I didn't feel like I should, but I still did, if that makes sense. I'm not going to hide it. This is bigger than me, Back in the day, you looked at playing sports, it was a little bit more you're representing your race and trying a little bit more meaning. So wherever I went, I remember having conversations with Anson in college. Say the school newspaper would have a little editorial on, was it integration or assimilation, and I'd be on the side of y'all just want us to assimilate and everything. Right. And him and me and him going back and forth and having these conversations. So I was always pretty outspoken. I think he even mentioned that in a newsletter that he sent out to people about a year ago. But I was like, he was like, Stacey Wilson, who's always been. I was like, okay. All right. Thanks, coach.
Yeah, you're paying attention.
That's what's up.
So, wow. Okay. So I love where this has gone. Can you say a little bit more about what you think, or like, how do you feel about this kind of recent, like reemergence of like player power, player protests, particularly in soccer, right? We see the black Players for Change in the MLS. We see the Black Women's Players Collective in the NWSL. Can you just talk about the importance of players, Black players, particularly in soccer, kind of finding their voice, finding their power, demanding change?
They didn't have those players associations back in the day. And I do think that is great, because, back in the day, we had to just kind of fit into, you had to be perfect, let's say. You weren't allowed to be a individual, especially women's soccer.
Interesting.
Because I guess they look at it as we're trying to market it, and so we can't have any type of... just against the grain type of personalities.
Yeah.
So, the associations now, I think they're important. I'm processing it all, because it is, to me, like so much going on that, I am processing what the effect of this is, or what's genuine and how things are gonna really shake out over time. It's hard to say, in 1 year of something being in existence. True. But I do know that, like I said, the same type of camaraderie and strength that I get by being associated with other Black coaches, I'm sure these players are getting. There's a reason why I was roommates with Thori and hung out with her all the time. Tammy Pearman joined the team, me and her were tight, so. I'm happy for them to be able to talk about things, that they need to, what I am aware of, or what I do worry about, is if we're just processing old issues, you know, like, you know, sometimes like been there, done that. Glad you're figuring it out now. You know, the hoopla over it. Is it really going to create change? Because it,
right.
So I hope we're not just being caught up in the same patterns of outrage, but then it gets swept on and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that type of, you know, racism doesn't go away. It just shifts.
That's it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Please go ahead.
Well, no, it was a real interesting thing to me. Like even where, I'd become a teacher, you know, up in that Flint Hill school. So, and I remember the guidance counselor's mailbox, it was open mailbox. I wasn't like snooping, but she had like a real interesting article. And I looked, you know, took a copy of it, whatever. I made a copy of it, put it right there. And it was because it was called The Subtlety of Racism and everything. And, so I was all right, and I went and read it, and then I went back and had another one of those conversations with my coach, you know, at UNC. And we were out at lunch, and I was explaining to him, you know, this art, you know, they do a study, and you know, if you go and you have this person here and this person here, and they're both equally you know, they're both not good for a job, you know, not qualified, and then you have two people who are very qualified, you know, so we sent someone in black, sent someone in white, you know, and then same thing with the qualified, someone black, someone white. I said, well, you know, yeah, the unqualified people, there was no difference, that they didn't find a big difference in the, but where the racism lied is in the two people that were perfectly equally qualified. This white person was just found to be amazing, you know, like they were just so good. And so it was like, you know, and I think I was getting to the, like, you know, so the way, you know, racism, and I thought I was schooling him, and he said something like, yeah, we're more sophisticated than that. And I was just like, and I just, I don't know what, that just resonated with me. Like, okay.
Wow.
And I don't know why, it almost bothered me. Like, you knew this?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so it's a but you know,
interesting. That's fascinating. I mean, okay. No, this is incredible, Stacey. Like, all of these stories it's just kind of blowing my mind, coach, to be honest.
Yeah, like he compares, even in the book, he says our personalities are most alike. Yeah, he's raised on a I think his dad was in oil overseas. He's raised in like a compound in Ethiopia. So someone who I like, you know, love, Haile Selassie, you know, he's like, oh yeah, I met him once.
Because
he went to school in Ethiopia. He said, you know, I got an award, the English speaking award. So then he got to meet, like,
get out of here.
Oh my God. All these little, it's just interesting.
Yeah. No, that's what's up. I mean, so you mentioned just a minute ago about like your experiences with the national team, right? The very few black women, and like when they did come, you were always, you know, hanging around each other. Can you say more about what that experience was like as one of the few black women on the team? Just because that's a perspective of the player experience we don't hear often about, how race kind of interacts or, you know, moves weirdly throughout these different player relationships, throughout these national teams. Can you just say a little bit more about that and like how, you know, how that was for you? If it's not too personal, I don't want to, you know.
Well, I've learned to not get too personal with it because I don't need to open up scars, you know, like it actually is, you know, there are things that, I guess you could say weren't, you know, it's not like something you enjoy. And specifically, I can be specific with it. It seemed like back then, like this wouldn't happen now, but the term chemistry was real big back then. So, you know, you're great, you're our best at the top, but chemistry wise, you don't fit in. Sorry. Like, that would be, you'd have a problem right now saying that to a national team player. you know? And actually, yeah, my mom back in the day did bring it up to the national team. How come, because it happened to me where I was outright told like, you know, you didn't make the team because of chemistry, and told this like on the day, like on cutting day. Wow. Like, how was the problem chemistry wise? Why don't you tell me this? Like, in the middle of this 6-month training camp that we've been in.
Right.
So for me, it was like, I didn't make the World Cup team before the Olympic team. So 95, I didn't make that team. And I really deserved to be on that team. I wasn't taken last minute, and an extra goalie was taken. And a girl who was known for being good with chemistry, like outright good with chemistry. And this girl, mind you, later on sued the national team and everybody, members. Yeah. So that's what I mean.
This is the one with good chemistry.
Yeah, this is one. But again, wolf in sheep's clothing, like you're, you know, but she was white and acted like this and she's good for chemistry. Like, yep. You know, so. And then for me, it was like, okay, maybe I'm a little rough around the edges. Maybe I'm, you know, I was raised in a little bit in East Orange. I love like a little basketball. Maybe I'm, but then when like I heard another player was told, you know, chemistry, and I was like, this player, like she go to church all the time. Her mom plays organ. She's bad for chemistry too. Like, okay, wow. Like wow. That's where it's like, no, this is. You know,
yeah.
But then again, when my mom brought it up back then, that's when I truly got blackballed, you know? So during a time where I was playing some of the best soccer of my life, I couldn't get brought in for a camp. I'm kicking these girls' ass on the pro field because we had the semi-pro, the Raleigh Wings, people, and they're getting brought into camp. But because my mom complained about, you know, y'all tried to call them out as racist, then we don't even want to. You know, I even got brought into my coach's office one point, Anton, because he wasn't coaching the national team anymore, but he was still friends with them. So I guess, you know, hey, Stace, you don't really think Tony's a racist, do you? I was like, well, when you put it that way, I'm pretty sure we're talking about systemic things and you're trying to make this personal. Like,
right.
So yeah, it just wasn't a good experience from that sense. And then to watch, to feel like, I know I was better than some of the people on that 99 squad, period. You know, think about how much that'll weigh on you. So,
right.
You know, so yeah, that was, but at least I do have the Olympic gold medal, you know, that's something nice to fall back on. But it would have been nice to have a longer career.
Of course.
But back then it was, again, that was back in the day when it was convert them to a defender. You know, nobody really got a chance up top or, you know, so, and then it was with that, convert them to a defender. Now we can only take one of you. So Tori went to the World Cup and then I went to the Olympics.
That's wild.
Like,
that's
awkward. You can't have two of us on here. So
and you kind of see some of the similar, like the same, sorry, AD. Like we see some of the same things today, right? I mean, Crystal Dunn, right? Mm-hmm. Like putting her in the back when she's like literally the best attacking midfielder, like one of the best attacking midfielders in the world right now, right? But the national team feel like they just need to put her. Of course, a lot of people, you know, we talked to Shea Butter FC, Silves and Sky. They said, what's up, by the way? You know, like they talk about this all the time, right? Just the ways in which the U.S. Soccer Federation has a race problem, right? They don't know how to figure it out. They don't know what to do with all these great black women soccer stars. And to your point, they sometimes it just feels like, okay, we're going to take you right now, right? We're going to take you right now, right? We're going to just, they treat black players differently than they would treat white players, right? So it's a shame, you know, and of course you're not the only one, right? We can probably go down the list and, you know, hear similar stories from different black women that are played throughout the system. So sorry, just had to put that out.
Again, racism doesn't go away, it just changes, you know.
That's right.
And I'm going to shift.
Say it again.
It becomes more sophisticated.
That's it. Damn.
Becomes more hidden. Okay, shifting back into the coaching talk, do you have any advice for any aspiring coaches?
I guess it would be aspiring to, it would, my advice would change depending on the level that they're aspiring to go to, you know. Okay. They would just want to be a youth coach, you know. The advice would probably be the biggest on how to, it would probably be advice on managing parents and things, you know. Because that's probably the biggest headache that youth coaches encounter, how they mm-hmm. how they handle that. You know, because X's and O's, I can give them advice on that. But if I'm trying to give something more unique, I mean, these days it really is important, the networking. If you're trying to go pro, you just mm-hmm. network, because it ain't about what you know, it's about who you know with that. Sure. Maybe even college too. You know, there's so many coaches and people that want to get a foot in the door, but you know, as you know, we say, you know, you have to have somebody in the room that's willing to, you know, promote your name or put it out there. So that's the big thing is, and that's probably where the value of the convention comes in for people, mm-hmm. is making sure that they have the right connections. Mm-hmm. Just try to have fun with it too. Try to, it's with youth level, it's tough because, you know, that they want to win so much, and it ends up overtaking the culture. And a lot mm-hmm. of times you're so worried about winning that you're not doing the things it takes to win. You know, I try to tell that's the biggest thing with the U9 parents. Like, they are crazy. And I actually went to a party yesterday, a surprise birthday party, and I met one of the guys that was, when they were U8, he said, well, I actually worked with them. You know, I was one of three coaches, and I tried to tell them, you know, do rondos and things, but they just wanted to do calisthenics, and they were all about winning. And I'm like, what's going on today? To get them to get your lawn chair back from the practice field. Don't talk to them at practice. On the field, like, I tend to let parents be, but at one point I had to say, be quiet, over to the other sideline. Like, don't, because it was a corner kick, and they gonna tell who to go up, take the corner kick.
Wow.
Hell no.
You know, so that right there made me have to, you know, because I don't like to shame parents, you know, or anything.
Sure.
You know? But yeah, to me, that it's a never satisfied type of group. It's like there's so much improvement going on. Right. I got some kids who their ball rolls, oh, they kick it. Oh, now he's dribbling and thinking and making a decision, you know. But do we get a thank you for that? You know, no, you're still trying to yell from behind the goal at practice.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? You know. So it's
no, that's a fascinating perspective, because I mean, oftentimes we hear coaches talk about the on-field play, even their relationship with the players, but this kind of extra relationship, this kind of external relationship with the parents is something that, you know, coaches got to consider as well, right? Particularly on the youth level, for sure.
Got to navigate it.
Mm-hmm. You have to know how to manage them. We have, I think our club started working with Sky Eddie's soccer parenting. It's a thing, trying to give resources. So I've put out articles on our team app that I wanted them to read, about how they should be behaving. And I think we're going to have to do something with the referees too, because they don't know how to talk to referees, and, you know. So I'm looking up, somebody told me there's something called Officially Human. It's a new thing, and so they must be a resource for clubs to try to educate parents on how to better treat referees. So I'm looking into that, because we have to. I'm trying to grow our program here at Hopetown.
Okay.
We're up in Martin County. So okay. Up in Martin County, Hopetown, that's where the high school is located too. So, and we're just not going to grow with this type of lack of etiquette, pedigree. Like, you know, I'm the type of person, you know, you win, act like you've been there before. And that's right. You know, as well, like I had to say something the other day. So they're like, And I said, you know what the problem is the parents. You know, they don't know how to, they make it where it's such a focus on winning that when we go in a game and we get up a goal, they get all happy and giddy, you know, and don't know how to actually just seal off a game. Yep. You know, get happy and then let in go. There goes your, and then if we go down a goal or two, then suddenly it's here. Don't nobody know how to fight back. You know, it's right. We have to be up here on top, or else our attitudes are down. Like that's what
Yeah.
So that's why I try to get them out of that loser mindset and get them more into that growth mindset. That, you know, everything that we talk about. You know, grit. Just development. Worry about, you know, help them to gain confidence, real confidence, not confidence because you won. So what happens when you don't win? Now suddenly you're the worst player. Like, as I even say, you know, there are times where I've told them, you know, at the end of the game, look, we didn't win as a team, but every single one of you, your parents going to tell you, you played well. And they're right. You played great today. So, you know, we're getting better as a team, you know, like things like that. Like, be worried that we didn't win today. Like, and they could see the improvement with you actually, if they don't have that parent, you know, reminding them of it. One kid said, we were in the huddle. One kid said, we've lost 17 games in a row. I said, how do you know that? He said, because he knew the answer was my parents. knows we talk about not, you know, that really isn't what our team values. You know, it was kind of like, you know, and they have won their first game since then and all, but it's like you playing against teams that have been together for 3 years. Why do you think you should? Like, so let's
I love that. Like, this is it's not a loser mindset versus winning mindset. It's a loser mindset versus a growth mindset, as you said.
Exactly.
I love that distinction. So you also mentioned, you know, and we'll start wrapping it up, Stacey. You know, we want to thank you again for just taking this time to chop it up with us. So we have three final questions, or kind of a little bit more relaxed questions. So you talked a little bit about you're in Martin County now in Hope Sound. What is your favorite, because you've been around, it seems like you've been around South Florida, right? You've been in Boca, you've been in West Palm, you know, Martin County. What is your favorite neighborhood? What is your favorite area of South Florida?
To do what? No. favorite
that's
area.
That's an important question.
Yeah.
For sure.
Just in terms of general vibes.
Yeah, general vibes. I mean, I like beach vibes. I mean, I've gone down to Fort Lauderdale a couple of times. I'd say maybe that Fort Lauderdale area, just because you can get the beach vibes you need. And then you got the Caribbean crowd there. So, you know, there's a little bit of beauty in the scenery. So probably that area. You know, I don't have any family down here. So, you know, there's not, and I didn't grow up down here. So there's not, I think, if I had, then that might affect things. But for the most part, I've worked my way up. When I first moved to Florida, I lived down in Weston. And then I moved, and then where did I move from there? West Palm Beach, then up to Tequesta. Now I'm even further north. So I feel like it gets a little bit less crazy the further north I go.
A little bit.
It depends on how you define crazy, but
all right,
that's another.
I mean, well, Florida itself is crazy. The soccer tribal crazy. The soccer.
Okay.
That's what I mean. Like, just teams and, you know, recruiting and all of that. Up here, it's a little bit less. Yeah.
Right. Now, when it comes to food, where would you go for your favorite food? What's your favorite restaurant in South Florida?
That's a tough one, because about a year ago I tried eating vegan, and I did it. I was like strict vegan except for the honey thing, because true vegans don't do honey. But yeah, the no dairy, eggs and meat. So that makes your options going out a lot less, which then is why I switched over, and now I'm more of a flexitarian, and that is a real thing. You know, you got vegetarian, and you got a couple of different names, because the ones that don't eat, some eat dairy, but then not the eggs. So there's a different name. But a flexitarian is basically like, for the most part, you don't eat, you know, meat, and but occasionally you do. So that's me. I still don't eat pork, really haven't eaten beef. But at like the surprise birthday party yesterday, like I was, I was having me some shrimp, things like that.
Yep.
Favorite spot? Yeah. Back when I lived in Weston, I had some favorite spots. It was a sushi spot down there. I think it was like Moon Thai.
Moon Thai.
Yeah.
Moon Thai is that spot.
Yeah. Really
a lot of people like Moon Thai.
Yeah.
And then I think, you know, maybe went to, what's that restaurant that has the Bang Bang Shrimp? Bonefish Grill. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
They had like good food, nice happening bar, a little bit, you know, not too crazy of a vibe, yet you felt like you were, you know, out doing something.
Where?
Yeah.
So aside from the spot, do you have like just a favorite dish in general?
Favorite dish?
Yeah.
Maybe my mom's sweet potato pie.
Come on.
These days I really don't. I'm pretty, and I'm happy that way, not being like, you know, like stuck on food, you know. So I'm pretty flexible, and I'd say that hasn't always been that way. So I guess is that like if you're on, you know, your, what is that, where you go getting the death, your last meal? If I could do a last meal, it would probably be something like lobster and steak. Some lobster and steak, but a nice steak. And then cookie dough ice cream. I'd like, ooh, definitely have known, I'm known for that throughout the family. Anybody who, they even talk about me. Yeah. Oh, she stayed at our house and damn, we ain't had no ice cream next day. Sorry.
Make sure y'all go get some cookie dough ice cream. Stacy's coming over.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. Well, this body burns calories, you know.
Hey. Come on.
It used to really burn. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what's up. So, Stacy, you are obviously a very well-read person. You love the intellectual conversations. You love the philosophical conversations. What are you reading right now? Or what was the last thing that you've read that really stuck with you?
Let's see. What's the last thing I read? So many books. I mean, really, like I said, the strength and conditioning journals, that's where I spend a lot of the spare time. I spend a lot of time reading different, even just soccer books, because like I said, I like coming up with fresh ideas, fresh things. Book wise, what's that book I have right there, Mom? Can you grab that one? The blue one with blue and red, right? No, to your right.
There's just so many books.
Navigate. I mean, like, it's right there next to the purple one, lower. In fact, grab the purple one too. And grab the other one right there. So that's good. So books that I love, like I could read Angela Davis, like I just love her stuff.
Come on.
I've read her. She has a book on prison system.
Our prison's obsolete.
Prison's obsolete. I read that. I love that. That was eye-opening. This one right here is a fun book. It's like a bunch of little memoirs.
What doesn't kill you makes you blacker.
What doesn't kill you makes you blacker.
Okay.
I mean, let me see. My library's behind me. I can unblur it. And then here's another Angela Davis one. So that's pretty much, let's see, blur my background. No. Can you see it?
Love it.
The books.
Wow.
You know, yoga, inverting the pyramid, soccernomics.
Yes.
All right.
You know, effective coaching, manager's guide to coaching. Yeah, these are all, But then you got stuff like, oh, this is a good one for any coaches out there. Soccer speed. Yeah, this guy's great for, that helped me teach a lot of coaches reading that. But, okay. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
For those of you listening and who can't see, Stacy is showing off her incredible library. Yeah. It's just fantastic. Jeez Louise.
Also a light flex with the Pelé and Ali.
Oh yeah.
Picture behind her.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Like, absolutely. Like
a hero. Mm-hmm. Dope. Yeah. But no, I love reading. If I could, and I never thought I'd be the type of person to say that. You know, I just love running around and all that. But no, to me, I've had the points in life and I would like to get more there. I'm right now ending the kind of a busy season, but yeah, I like to wake up, go outside and read, you know, first nice. Hour of the day.
Hey, you can never go wrong with starting your day with a little bit of Angela Davis in your life. So
exactly. I mean, it just keeps me centered on purpose. And she's really, I mean, that she really, even with the women's award group, you know, it's just helped me see things the way she does it, like take out divisions, you know, because it's really a lot of times it's about class more than it is race. And the race ends up, so she's helped me see how even with feminism, how it doesn't work. You know, we got to combine, you know, and let's see how we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Stacy, hopefully we can have you on another episode where we can just talk about books and Angela Davis.
Hey, Black feminism. Yeah.
There's another episode right there.
Right. That would be good. Hey, was a good one back in the day. It really changed my view. And my cousin, he's a professor at Winston-Salem. He gave me the book. Okay. It took me at least 5-10 years to read it. And I wish it hadn't, but it was $40 Million Slaves. That's a great
book by Bill Roden.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yep, that's eye-opening. Yep. That helped me see different things. And it was like, damn,
absolutely.
If I'd have read this book, I don't even know if I would have gone to UNC. I would have maybe chosen the HBCU. Like, right. You know,
interesting.
Right? So it's yeah. I mean, as much as I've, I guess, accomplished in soccer, I do sometimes wonder, like, should I have, you know, go on a different route, just been more the intellectual route, you know, be like you.
No. Yeah. Do both. It's never too late. You know, it's never too late. You can do both. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Stacy, we definitely going to have you on another episode at a later time. So thank you again for taking the time out of your day to, you know, chop it up with us. This was a fascinating talk. And hopefully we can do it again soon.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you. Thank you for having me on, and I appreciate all you do with the group. And I see you, MLS project, all that.
Oh man, yeah.
It's an honor to be on. Whenever you need me, I'm here.
Awesome.
Thank you so much, Stacy.
All right.
All right, take care.